This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batser in coming winter, southern New England, to Jeremy Zakas, my good comrade. He is in New South Wales, in the southern hemisphere, and it is springtime. Springtime brings the flowers, brings everybody joyful. The weather warms enough sometimes for you to go to Bondi Beach and enjoy the barbecue and snakes, lots of snakes. Jeremy Zakas has a lawn that's growing very fast now, and he's already announced that he's had to cut it twice and might need to go out and cut it again. Immediately I thought, oops, this is where things go awry. Cutting your lawn in Australia. Remember, everything in Australia is exotic and will try to kill you, especially eastern brown snakes who are pretending to be a stick in your lawn. Jeremy, we talk about snakes because it's a fascination to me. You grew up with them. But even Australia is noting you've got more snakes than you expected. Are they still protected? You still turn them loose. Hey, Jeremy.
Absolutely do, John. Absolutely. And it is absolutely illegal to kill any of these critters. So any snake, and these are the snakes, I will remind you, that will kill you with a single bite. So they can kill you. In fact, a lot of these snakes can kill 200 humans with the venom in their body. But it is absolutely illegal for us to kill them. So what we have to do is, when we find them, we have to get a professional in to come and catch them. And then that professional has to actually let them go in designated areas. And those designated areas, John, I've only just recently found out, really aren't as far away as I thought they were. In many cases, the ones here in southern Sydney, one of the areas that they actually release a lot of the snakes they catch here is only around about, say, 15 miles away, which still sounds like a long way, but when it's a snake, it's still too close for me. So honestly, John, we can't kill them. We have to live with them. And when we release them, we really don't release them that far away from when we originally catch them.
The snakes are overbred, and they're coming. But I would look in the children's room, in the closets, in the WC, I'd look, especially in the kitchen, I'd look under the doors. I don't know that I would look in the swimming pool. Is that something you would look in?
Well, funny you should mention that, John, but actually, yes, and this is from personal experience. So just to put it in context, what's happened this week is because there are so many snakes turning up everywhere from Queensland to here in New South Wales to down to Victoria, public service announcements are going out now warning people also to look out in your pools, because there are a lot of snake sightings in swimming pools. And not only are they brown snakes, red-bellied black snakes, and the tiger snakes, which are the venomous ones, but also to a lot of pythons, especially in Queensland. And now, in my own experience, when I lived back in South Australia, back in my hometown of Adelaide, we had a swimming pool, and we also lived right next to a national park, which meant invariably at least two or three times in every summer I lived there, there would be at least one brown snake found in the pool. And what was happening was the brown snakes, looking for a source of water on those particularly warm days, would actually move into the pool. And unfortunately, a lot of them did drown. So while it is illegal to kill them, if they accidentally do die on your property, it's not illegal. That's what happens. But the snakes do typically go to pools for water sources. But the one thing I also learned too, which we were very lucky we didn't have, they also like resting in filters and basically the motors of swimming pools as well, because when it gets a little bit cooler and snakes are looking for a heat source, often those low RPM motors that are working in swimming pools to keep the chlorine and all the water sort of churning through it, they are actually a great warmth source for the snakes as well. So a lot of people would actually report snakes tied around their filters and actually the motors associated with their swimming pools as well, which is exactly what the public service announcements this week were saying. Basically, look in your filter baskets, look in your swimming pool, look before you leap when you jump in your pool. Definitely look around the foliage around your pools as well, because water is a great source for snakes. So unfortunately, John, while we haven't really talked about it much, but swimming pools here in Australia are actually one of the biggest attractor of snakes. And anyone who's had a swimming pool who's lived near a national park has many, many stories like me where we've literally had to fish dead bodies of snakes out of the swimming pool because that's where they're attracted to.
There's a photograph accompanying one of these stories, and it shows, is that a carpet python?
That absolutely is. And you can actually see it's nestled itself into the basket, because carpet pythons do enjoy a little bit of coolant, a little bit of water running over them. That's why you typically find them in tropical areas and rainforests where there is that natural water flowing through the vegetation. So you can imagine a swimming pool that maybe not turning its filter on all the time every day provides a perfect place for it to effectively have a nice, cool, damp, sort of dark spot to hang out, and at the same time feel very, very safe. But also, too, swimming pools do attract a lot of mosquitoes and bugs and other animals. So you can imagine that python has probably been living there throughout the winter quite happily, feeding on a lot of things. But now that they've actually, you know, the family or whoever owns the pool has looked into it, it's now got to be moved. But filters, baskets, exactly like that photo, that's exactly where you'll start to see some of these snakes.
Jeremy, I'm looking at a picture of a beautiful swimming pool. What would I do if offered to go to the swimming pool in Australia? I would say, I'm going to the library. That's what I would say. Jeremy, there's no place safe. You can't cut the lawn. You can't go to the swimming pool. You can't get in your car without checking under the seat or the hood. They go everywhere. There's no place you could actually relax and say, no snakes are here. Is that correct?
That is honestly true and correct. And honestly, and I hate to bust your bubble there, John, but even libraries are not safe. This year alone, in the last 2 months, there have been two brown snakes found in libraries, one in Perth in Western Australia and one, unfortunately, here in New South Wales on the North Coast. And in both cases, they were actually brown snakes. One was a Great Eastern brown snake here in New South Wales. So, John, even your local library is not safe either. So I don't know, maybe you have to learn to live in a bubble or something, but there's just no avoiding snakes here in Australia. There's no safe place.
All right. Now we go to another romantic tale. It's springtime. It's breeding season. The nests are filled with eggs, and the birds are very carefully preparing for the birth of their young, especially the beautiful magpies. These are the two-tone black and white birds that very much are accustomed to people. They like people, except during breeding season. There's a photograph that Jeremy has sent me. It's almost like an illustration for a cartoon. A young woman with a riding helmet on is looking furtively over her right shoulder, being pursued by a magpie. She's on a bicycle and she can't outrace him. What do I see, Jeremy? What's happening here?
Well, John, what you're actually seeing is a science experiment, believe it or not, in Canberra, because one of the things that has been noted in the studies of magpies is that they attack cyclists, they attack people on bikes much more than they attack just people wandering or people jogging or people that are just going about their daily lives. And what's happening down there in Canberra is that this lady, Stephanie Skinner, has decided to actually run an experiment this summer. So what she's doing is she's riding her bicycle along some of the glorious natural paths there in Canberra, a lot of the bushland areas, wearing different clothing, including different wigs and different sunglasses and different color clothes. And she's actually documenting the times when she's being attacked by magpies and when she's not being attacked by magpies. And you'll also see in that photo, one of the things she's about to try, I think she tried last week and is going to continue trying, is wearing large wigs with a lot of hair, because there is a theory that people with large hair to a magpie actually present a kind of opportunity, especially if they're building a nest, to find some very fine, I guess you could say, malleable fiber to go in that nest. So people with long hair riding a bicycle are actually probably most at risk of being attacked. But Stephanie's going to try and prove that, and she'll report at the end of the summer how she goes. So, John, this is actually very exciting. I'm waiting to see whether or not it is the colours, whether or not it is the hairstyles, or whether or not magpies just hate people on bikes. But she might be about to answer some of these great myths that we've always wondered about here in Australia but never really known the answer to.
She's wearing a very fancy bike helmet. Is that a clue? Do they only attack bike helmets?
There is a thought about that as well. And often what people do with their bike helmets is they attach basically kind of plastic ties to them and create little spikes coming off the bike helmets, trying to dissuade the magpies from going after the bike helmets, but it never seems to work. So there seems to be something in the color of the bike helmet, maybe the shape or something looks very offensive to the magpies. So that's another part of it too. She will be wearing a bike helmet for most, but not all of the experiment too, which if she can prove whether or not the bike helmet is the key factor here, it's going to have a lot of questions for, I guess, cyclist safety if you're sort of told not to wear a bike helmet to avoid a magpie. But also, too, it actually provides a little bit more clue into how you may actually avoid a magpie attack. There might be something you can actually do to that bike helmet.
Do the crows attack bicyclists?
They actually don't. The crows are completely the opposite. The crows, they'll have their nest. They'll definitely squawk at you. They'll get aggressive, but they don't swoop like the magpies. Even cyclists, and there are a lot of crow families around here and a lot of cyclists, but I've never seen them actually attack a cyclist. It's only the magpies that seem to have a go.
Jeremy Zacks in New South Wales, cutting his lawn. High risk, very high risk. Don't pick up a stick. If you think it's a snake, it's a snake. If you don't think it's a snake, it's a snake. Okay. We're off to ashes because the only way to get over cutting your lawn in the springtime is to think about the fact that in a couple of weeks, all England is arriving at Perth for the first test of ashes. And we've got a breakdown of the teams, and it's not positive. This is Friends of History Debating Society. Jeremy Zacks. I'm John Batchelor.